Chapter 17. Heading out again. By the end of March, Jerusha Bent was well enough for her days of exposure to move around her cabin, cook for the two of them, and boil her own healing yarb teas. Once the word of her accident spread, mountain people came by, bringing her and Charlie fresh-killed game, venison, and wild turkey so they wouldn't go hungry. No mountaineer praised Charlie for his devotion to her, though he often heard her tell them, "Nobody can hold a candle to my boy here for pure goodness. He takes good care of me. Now go look at the hide of the critter on the shed wall. He killed her all alone with my old rifle that's near as tall as he is. There never was a painter the size of this one that I ever set eyes on before." And the visitors would go to the shed, look at the pelt, and return with nods of approval for Charlie. If they came back to the cabin, Granny Jerusha would sometimes add, lying for Charlie's sake, so the story would spread, "My yarbs, they done good things for Charlie here, but it took some time, like all good doctrine does. One yarb cleared the wool out of his head, and another one got his tongue working. My Charlie's smart as any of us." Sometimes, then, she'd ruffle Charlie's hair and smile at him. Occasionally, too, she'd go on to say to an audience of mountain folk, "I bet you wonder where my boy came from," but was too polite to ask. "It'd only be natural for you to wonder. After all, you never seen him before. I started fetching him to Herne Hollow with me." Oh, but old Jerusha was a skillful liar, having said that she'd gone on to add without batting an eyelash, "He's an orphan from Kentucky. He come here last spring hunting for some of his ma's kinfolks, who all went away to God knows where. You know how many fallen down cabins there is up here that folks left years ago and critters move into. Being the way Charlie was when he got here, not talking good, he couldn't come up to you and ask where they went or to ask you for food and roof over his head. His poor stomach got so empty he tried to rob eggs out of my hen house, and I caught him doing it. Because I could see there was no harm in him, and he was wool-headed to boot, I took him on. I'm mighty glad I did, seeing as how he came to himself, thanks to my yarbs, and saved my life, and saved the rest of us from that panter critter that used to bedevil us. The way I see it, we all owe a debt to Charlie for doing us that service." When she finished, the mountaineers would make sounds that let a proud Charlie know that they did appreciate his killing the mountain lion that had come to other hen houses before coming to Granny Bent's. Coy McRae came one day to get rheumatism yarbs for his granny. The mountain boy was ill at ease. He went with Charlie to examine the golden pellet. Then for quite a while he stood silently beside him, while Charlie waited for him to speak. Finally Coy opened up and said, "I heard tell you shot old Ryfoot with that old long rifle Granny Jerusha keeps." "That's what I did." "Did the piece kick like a mule?" "Kicks worse than Canaan. It knocks me on my back every time I fire it." "I done think I'd want to fire it," Charlie said modestly, enjoying this. "I done take pleasure in it." Now he added, "I ain't no Bent by blood, no kin at all to Granny here. How come you jumped me down in Herne Hollow, Coy?" Coy shook his yellow head. "Because the first time I saw you, you were in company. You were in her company. I figured you for a far-out relative of the Bents, and us McRae's is supposed to fight Bents whenever we sees them." "Well, I ain't no Bent, so there ain't no cause to fight me any more, long as you don't give Sary Giffen no more trouble." Charlie put his thumbs into the suspenders old Jerusha had woven to hold up the new homespun pants she'd sewed for him. He was shooting up fast now, and some day he'd be as tall as Johnny had been when he went off to war. Coy, now shorter than Charlie, looked at the thumbs, then shook his head. "I don't mean no harm to Sari. I like to josh her to see her face turn red." "Well, don't you do that any more. Josh some other girls that make take it better and turn redder." "But on second thought, I don't think you ought to say anything at all that shames any girl to hear. They can't fight you back. It ain't manly to do what you did." Charlie watched the other boys swallow and look away. Coy's hands stroked the mountain lion's hide, ruffling the stiff, tawny fur. He asked, "Where'd you learn to shoot, Charlie?" "Where I come from, my big brother, Johnny. He saw to it I learned." "Where's he now?" "Dead. Killed at Gettysburg." Coy nodded. "My cousin, he died there, too. We miss him." Coy McRae turned now and walked away, leaving Charlie thinking sadly of Johnny and of the war still going on here in Virginia. Some of the Giffen family came one day very late in March, Sary with them. They visited with Granny and admired the pelt. While the older Giffens were inside the cabin with Granny, Charlie and Sary struck out walking together through the still bare-limbed apple trees. Because the shy girl was silent, Charlie started the conversation. He cleared his throat and said, "Coy McRae won't bother you no more, Sary." "How come he won't?" Sari glanced at him from under shining black lashes. "'Cause I talked to him about you and told him not to say things to you that you don't want to hear." How easily the mountain speech came to him by now. Sari smiled. "Thank you, Charlie. Are you my knight in shining armor?" "What'd that be?" Charlie was taken aback. "The old-time horseback rider that saves ladies who are in a fix." "Where'd you hear about that, Sari?" "In a book I'm reading now. I don't make it out so good yet, 'cause I ain't far past the ABCs, but it has pictures in it. The last preacher who came through told me about one of the pictures. It had a knight in armor, and armor always shines real bright, 'cause it's made out of pure silver. There was a lady in the picture, too. The preacher said that the knight had saved her from being ate up by a dragon that snorted fire. The knight's holding her so tenderly to his armor." Sari Giffen sighed. "A knight?" Charlie marveled. "Was that how she saw him? Somebody who used to be a Bowery boy?" It was better being thought a knight. His chest swelled as he basked under her admiring gaze. "How come you think about me, Sari?"
"I ain't so much."
He felt the heat rise in his cheeks as his eyes fell from hers. "'Cause you fought for me, and killed the painter, and saved Granny Bent's life. Ain't that enough to be a knight?" "Oh, I don't know, Sari." Charlie fell silent, not knowing what else to do. Just then a woman's high-pitched cry called, "Sari, time to go now. Come on to the cabin." The girl left Charlie, running easily under the trees, and into the cabin to say goodbye to Granny. Charlie followed slowly after, hating to see the Giffens go. Maybe he ought to help the women folks up onto their mules. That'd be courteous, the sort of thing a knight should do. But before he could reach them, Sari came flying up to him over the spring grass. She pulled something out of her pocket and pressed it into his hand. It was a lock of her black, silken hair tied with a piece of frayed rose-colored ribbon. Grinning, Charlie put it inside his shirt while she watched, smiling too. Then she ran back to her mule and scrambled up onto it by herself. On the 4th of April, by Charlie's homemade calendar, Jacob Hodder came once more to the Bent farm. He'd been to Herne Hollow that morning and heard that General Lee and his army had marched out of Petersburg and Richmond, leaving these cities to the Yankees. A peddler from the east who had brought the news had said everybody figured Lee's soldiers would go ahead of the Yankees and take refuge in the mountains to go on fighting from here. As Charlie and Granny Bent stood together on their porch listening, Jacob Hodder told them, "That'll mean fightin' around these parts, and plenty of trouble for us. Fightin' up here could go on for years, and maybe never come to an end. It won't be like battles on bluegrass country flatland that are over till the next one starts. Up here, it'll be goin' on all the time with our boys and Yankee soldiers hidin' out and huntin' one another, and comin' to take away our animals and what we grow and need for ourselves." Shaking his head, the mountaineer rode off to his war news to the other farms. To take his war news to the other farms. The minute he was out of sight through the trees, Granny Bent grabbed Charlie by the arm. "You're going to go west tomorrow morning, Charlie. Hodder's dead right. The Confederates will come up here. It'll be the only place they can go to now. You maybe won't be able to fool 'em that you're a Kentucky boy like you can Hodder and the others. There'll be men from Kentucky among them. They could ask questions of you, and maybe wind up with the truth. That'd make 'em mad as hornets, and they'll shoot you. And even if they don't think you to be a Yankee, and they'll make you go into the army, they could be getting short of men by now. You're getting tall. Folks hereabouts tell how you killed the painter, so they'll find out you shoot good. That could make 'em come here and take you away with 'em right off. Either way, being shot as a Yankee or shoved into their army, it'd be a terrible bad for you. You have to leave before they get here. There ain't time for you to lay back and ponder going." Shaken, Charlie sat down on the porch beside the rocker she had just sat in. He hadn't expected to go, and so suddenly. He hadn't thought of where the Johnny Rebs would go if they knew they were losing. Of course they'd come up here. The mountains were their natural place of refuge, their last hope to keep the war going. Lee's men would be welcome here among other Confederates, and they could hide and fight out of here for years, as Hodder had said. "I guess I do have to go," the boy had said sadly. All at once he thought of something else. He turned to Granny Bent to ask worriedly, "What about you? Does anybody up here know you used to be in the Underground Railroad? If the soldiers find out, they'll come here after you." "Don't you fret over that. Nobody here who's still alive knows what me and Isaac did. Them that fetched us the black folks were older than us, and so were the folks we fetched the blacks to. They're all dead now." Charlie let out a sigh of relief. At least Granny Bent would be all right. She went on quickly.
I'll fix your cornbread and bacon, and boiled eggs and a cloth to take with you. There's water lots of places, so you won't thirst. Charlie said, I'll chop plenty of wood for you before I go. This time he let out a sigh of regret. But I won't be here to plant your corn, Granny. Don't fret over me, I tell you. I can take care of myself, but bless you for thinking of me. She reached out to run a gnarled old finger down his freckled cheek. Somebody'll come to plant my corn. Sary Giffin? Is there another Sary, Charlie? No, ma'am. Charlie touched the black hair coiled inside his shirt. That would leave him with him as his and Sary's secret. The old woman asked, Will you write me when you get to the West and are settled somewheres? But you can't read. Sary's learning. I reckon she'll come over to live with me soon. She wants to be a yard woman some day. The Giffins can spare her, and she hankers to start learning from me. There'll be a place for her when you go. I'll keep her safe. Write to the storekeeper in Herne Hollow. He'll see to it the letters get to me. Sure, all right. I'll write my sister in New York, too, when I'm settled someplace. Maybe Sary'll practice writing by answering me. Old Jerusha gave him a fleet, knowing look, and then asked softly, Maybe you'll come back, you'll think come on back to visit her and me once the war's over and done with? Come back here? Charlie turned to gaze at the great green hills that had sheltered him from the strangest yet most satisfying months of his life. It had been a dangerous refuge, but he had truly proven himself up here, not as a Bowery boy in the Bowery, nor as a soldier in the wilderness, but high in these mountains. He'd done it alone, with nobody urging him on or praising him for his courage, and it was more pure for having done alone. Charlie Quinn drew himself up to his full height, looked Granny Bent full in the eyes, and said, I reckon when I get to be as tall as I'll ever be, I'll be back. This ain't so bad a place for a man to settle. No, it ain't, she agreed.